Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with bonkers.ie, Ireland's favourite comparison and switching website. Visit bonkers.ie today and start saving on your household bills.
Good afternoon, I'm Jamie O'Reilly and this is Liveline.
Well, over the weekend here on Liveline, we have been getting more and more calls from our listeners about the scourge of bullying, and particularly bullying of young people and of our beautiful teenage children, and how they have to deal with this. And in some cases, families are left in a terrible situation when their child comes home and says that they have been bullied, and in some cases, it has led to them taking their own lives. And we heard last week from Aisling O'Neill talking about her beautiful daughter, Mia, and it struck a chord with an awful lot of people. And with us now is another mother grieving her the loss of her beautiful daughter, but feels it's important to speak if it helps others. And Mary Sheehan is from South Hill in Limerick. Mary, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon to you.
Mary, how are you?
I'm not doing too good. I'm not coping. Loss of my only child has took a detrimental effect on me.
Now, it's 5 months ago. It was in June.
In June, yeah. She took her own life.
Mary, will you tell me about your beautiful red-haired princess, as you called her, your red-haired queen, Kaylee. She was 14.
14 years old, yeah. My daughter Kaylee was the most loving and beautiful child. She wouldn't hurt nobody. If anything, I raised her. I'm just gets a bit upset, I'm sorry. To always help others and to be respectful. She was deeply loved and is deeply missed by both families. We are totally devastated by the death of our red-haired beauty queen. I can't imagine that I will never see her again. Sorry.
It's okay, Mary. It's understandable that you're obviously still very upset. But I want you to just think about Kaylee now and remember her growing up, and share with our listeners Kaylee's life, her short life, but her life with you. She was your only child. You both lived together in Limerick. Her dad and you were no longer together, but she enjoyed the company of and the love of both her dad and you. But just tell us a little bit more about Kaylee growing up in South Hill. Is that right, Mary?
Yeah, Kaylee grew up in South Hill. Kaylee was a very well-behaved child.
Yeah.
And was very well got within the community. Mm-hmm. And everybody knew her. She had a great sense of character about herself and was very funny and very respectful to others. That's how I raised her.
Yeah.
She
went to school locally?
She went to school in South Hill Junior School. She went on then from there to Lekela. And then she went to Nanonagle Presentation Secondary School, where she should be in third year.
She will be in third year.
Doing her
junior cert.
Junior cert, yes.
But what were her interests? I believe she loved fashion.
Oh, she loved fashion. She loved her bling.
Yeah.
She, two outfits a day were a must with her. Like, she'd be always changing her clothes. And, Kaylee was a member of the traveling community, which she was very proud of her heritage. So that's where, she was gone at every opportunity she could get.
And when you talk about her loving fashion, she had her whole, and you talk about her being the red-haired queen. She had her whole life mapped out. She was a very confident young lady.
Very confident young lady. She had her life, she knew what she wanted to do, and she had dreams that she wanted to conquer, but unfortunately these bullies robbed her of that,
But was she happy, Mary? Did you ever sense that there was any anxiety in her? Because she was at a stage of her life, I suppose, changing from a young girl into a young woman.
Mm. Yeah, no. No, Kelly was kind of happy. I'm not saying she was happy like the whole time, do you know what I mean? Like, everyone has their ups and downs. You have your good days, you have your bad days and stuff like that. Of course, like you said, she's going through puberty or her hormones or whatever, as you do when you're a teenager. But, you know, she was always a happy child, always laughing, always make jokes. Even her friends, like from school, you know, they miss her so, so much. Like, to say we missed the laugh we used to have with her. And she used to always give us advice, and she used to be very tough and always try to put us on the right road. And, like, her teachers even told me that Kelly is almost like an old soul. She's, like, 14, but she speaks a lot older and a lot wiser, and she seemed to kind of knew what was right and what was wrong, and had her head kind of like well screwed on, like, you know, it's not okay to be doing certain things and stuff like that, like, you know.
Yeah, well, that must have made you very proud, Mary, because that's what you wished for her as her mother.
Of course, yeah, made me very proud of the young lady that she was becoming.
Yeah,
becoming too.
And her dad is from the travelling community. Am I right?
Yes.
And that's that's her heritage on that side of the family, and he and his family were living in Tipperary. Okay, so but she was growing up with both her parents by her side and visited her family in Clonmel quite a lot.
Yeah, she like every weekend I drop her. She go, like, her routine was like Monday to Friday. She go to school. Friday come, her bag be packed. She go to see her nanny and her dad. And the rest of her family, uncles, aunts, father, things like that.
Which was great, you know, for her that, you know, that she was able to spend time with her father and that side of the family.
Wish she spent time with a lot of time with them. Like, she loved that life and she loved going out every summer. She couldn't wait for the summer to come, and she'd go out travelling to all the different places, and, you know, and so, that was her, and she enjoyed it, and she just loved being gone, like, and for that whole summer, like, it used to mean everything to her, you know, because they go around and they visit all different places, holy places, and do all different kind of things, special things together, and, you know, she loved that. And
Mary, you paint a picture of a wonderful, bubbly young lady that was full of confidence, full of exuberance, and was living life to the full and enjoying life.
Oh yes, of course.
There was never any outward sense of a problem or hassle. And I'm going to take you now to that terrible call that you received in June. But up until that phone call, up until that moment, was there ever an inkling in your mind, a parental instinct at all, that Kaylee was being bullied in any shape or form? Did it ever cross your mind?
No.
No.
No, not at all, because me and Kaylee were very, very close. We were best friends. We tell each other everything. There was no warning signs there for me. I did say to her, but you see, as you said, when they're growing up, and for Kaylee's age, she was very tall. And, you know, from January to June, was kind of, I kind of noticed that she was losing a bit of weight, but she was coming home and I was saying, did you eat, have your lunch today, do you know, and things like that. And she was like, yes, Mum. And I'm, well, yes, Mummy, because she called me Mummy or Mammy. And she'd sit and she'd eat her food and she'd go up to her room and she'd put on her music. She loved her music. She'd put on her boombox. Then I'd be like, you're going to come through the roof. And she'd just get ready, like, and she'd either go across the road to visit my sister or she'd go up and visit her aunties up in the site. And she'd go up and she'd be happy and her aunties would drop her home and things like that. Like, never, you know, there was never any, like, cutting herself up or anything at all like that.
Yeah. In a way, it kind of just epitomises her own strength and steeliness, that inside she was hurting but obviously wanted to protect you from it, and was going through all of this trauma but didn't want to show it outwardly until June. You were at home in Limerick and it was the 16th of June. You received a phone call, Mary.
Yeah, I was on the 16th of June. I was in my friend's house and I got a phone call from Kelly's aunt that I needed to come to Clonmel. And I said, why? She said, you just need to come. I goes, why? She said, look, you just need to come. I said, just tell me, please, what's wrong? Like, you know, I knew I could sense, like... And I think I handed the phone to my friend. I'm not sure. I can't remember. I can't remember a lot because I'm still very traumatic from the events that have happened in my life.
Okay.
I was then told that my child had hung herself on the 16th of June, which would have been Father's Day. And I had only been recently speaking to her 2 hours before that.
Did she call you?
She sent me a message on WhatsApp that I was talking to her that morning. She said she might come home. And then she said that evening, Mommy, I'm not coming home at all. I said, okay, love. Do you know, that's fine. Because she make her mind up. She's coming home. She's not coming home, do you know?
Mm, of course.
And, you know, I got the phone call to come that she was after hanging herself. And my body just shut down into shock. I was traumatic. My friend had to come and my friend bring me to Clonmel. It was the longest drive of my life. I was in, it is an adrenaline state when your body's in shock. And I just kept screaming in the car. Rain, just keep ringing, because they wouldn't, like, the child needed to go for scans and things like that. And I said, tell them I give my permission to just bring her up, like. So I finally got there. And I seen all the guards, and I knew then. And I went into her. And I opened her eyes. Her eyes were dead. So they bring her in straight away. Up. For the scan, so I had to wait around. So I was put into a room, as did I want. I think there was tea and stuff there and whatever, but I just went down to the chapel and I begged God to leave me my only child and to save her. And I prayed. And I was brought up to intensive care and brought into a room. I don't know who was with me. I can't remember. I can't remember a lot of stuff. But the
Mary,
doctor told me.
She was on life support and...
On life support, yeah. They bring me into a room. I think my dad was with me. I'm not sure, to be honest. I'd be telling you a lie. There was someone with me because someone I had to be with me because I wasn't receiving what was happening.
Yes, of course.
You know? And they said, your child is critically ill. And I said, is my child going to die? And they just dropped her head and said, she's critically ill. And they just left me in then on my own. I was only allowed in Clonmel intensive care. Mm-hmm. And I sat there all night with her. And I begged her to go back to me. I said, please, don't take her from me. She's my whole purpose in life. I live for her. She's my whole routine.
Kaylee eventually died, and as you said, your world has been turned completely upside down since then. At what stage, Mary, did you realise, if it's possible to think back, at what stage did you realise what had happened and why Kaylee had decided to end her own life? When did that register with you, or how did it surface?
Her auntie received information about certain individuals bullying my daughter, and my daughter saying, I'm only a child. You're big, hairy women. I don't want to fight with you. And that was on the same day. They made a fake page under another little girl's name that I don't even know that this little girl is aware of. And she's a real life person, you know? And you can see that they deleted everything that they were sending my daughter. So I don't know, like,
so
how long of a time frame it was kind of going on. It could have been going on for weeks.
So Mary, this was bullying online that she was at the receiving end of. From older people, was it?
Yeah, older adults that know right from wrong. Right from wrong, yes. Members of the travelling community, adults, yes.
And
yes.
Why were they picking on her?
I don't know, maybe an easy target, maybe jealous of her. They deleted everything off of the fake page, and all you can see on the fake page is one or two comments of my daughter saying, leave me alone.
My God.
And on another one, she named them and said, you're big, hairy women. I'm only a child. I don't want to fight with anybody. Leave me alone.
She knew right from wrong in that regard, as you
she
said.
She always knew right from wrong because I taught her from right from wrong. And then from their actions, she left her cousin, Shelley, and went over and hung herself.
How long was this going on for, Mary? Do you have any idea?
I honestly don't have any idea. I'm trying to put the jigsaw together myself.
Did she leave any note or explanation or
nothing.
Anything for you?
Nothing. Nothing for me. And it's not like her. It's not like her. Like, I've only talked her 2 hours before that. This is just...
In school, she got on very well, as you say.
Very well in school. Very well. She's lovely friends in school. She'd come home. She'd be a very kind of bubbly child. She'd come home and be laughing. She'd talk about the events through the day at school. And as I said, she'd have her dinner. She'd either go over to my sister or she'd go up to her aunt. She wouldn't be hanging out around corners or anything like that, you know. I wouldn't allow that, like, do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't allow that.
So this is somewhat unusual that a child, and she said, leave me alone, I'm only a child, that she was actually...
I'm only a child,
she
yeah.
was being bullied, not necessarily by in the schoolyard or by
no.
others her own age.
No.
which is often the case. This, as far as you were concerned, was coming from adults. I presume the Gardaí are involved, and maybe we'll leave it at that in that regard. But you...
I wouldn't be...
How are you coping since? I know that's a very silly question
coping.
In one way. You're not. But you feel, though, at the same time that you should speak out about this.
At the start, I was so traumatic. I'm still very traumatic. I'm very depressed. My own mental health isn't the healthiest. I'm so lonely without her. I have to go every day to a graveyard and sit at a grave.
That's understandable that you go to her grave every day and speak with her. That's perfectly normal and understandable, Mary.
But I shouldn't have to do that because she was robbed of her life because of these people.
Are you getting help, Mary, yourself? You need the strength yourself to continue on.
I've lost my appetite since my child died. My hair is falling out. I don't sleep. I don't eat. Like, I try to get something into me, whatever. My family, my friends, they're there. They support me and things like that and whatever, but it's just like my whole purpose in life was taken from me.
I know, Mary, but you got to just do your best to continue to seek justice for Kayleigh. She would wish you to get strength from sharing this story, which is it's a very personal story, and you've decided to speak publicly about it because, as you say, if it only saves one other
parent from going through the hell and the devastation me and my family are going through, and her dad's family, it would mean a lot.
And I know her dad is absolutely devastated as well at the loss of his beautiful daughter, and all of the family are.
Everyone is. She was the apple of my father's eye. He used to call her his Annie, I, out of the music, the film Annie.
Yeah.
They had a very, very close bond, her and my dad.
Mary, you've painted a wonderful picture of a wonderful young woman whose life was cut terribly short, but she made the most of her time with you and with her family and with her friends. And it's cold comfort at this stage, but you have to cling on to those happy memories and know that she did have a loving family and enjoyed a very happy life and had those great dreams, you know, for the future, and was very confident. And you did your best for her, and her family did her best to raise her to be a wonderful young woman. And that is exactly how she should be remembered. And Mary, I hope you've helped there now after this phone call. Please make sure you contact your friends. And
I'm actually going to a march for justice.
Okay.
Well, for my child.
Okay.
To make highlight awareness and issues of the mental health and the bullying and the homelessness and everything surrounding that.
Well, you have so many purposes now to continue to do that in memory of Kayleigh, and she will be urging you on, Mary, and I know our listeners will as well, listening to your story. And thank you for sharing with us today. And as you said, let's hope that it resonates with people out there, and particularly with anybody listening to us who, you know, parents that are listening to us that may have teenagers that we must, and even adults as well, who can be very cruel to others and not be cognizant of the words that they use and things they say, the effects that it has. Mary, look after yourself, please, won't you? And thank you for doing a big service here today by coming on and sharing a very personal story, but it is your wish to do that. And we're very thankful that you've come and spoke to us on Liveline today. And look after yourself. And we think of Kayleigh. We're all thinking of Kayleigh now with you today. Thank you, Mary.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
And you can text 51551. Hello, Alison.
Hi, Damien.
I know you've been listening to us over the last number of days, since last Tuesday, obviously since the sentencing of the two boys in the Anna Creasel case, and we've been listening to parents talking as a result of that to Joe and to myself here last Friday, and you heard Mary there, tough life that she has now to face into as a result of losing her beautiful daughter.
Yeah, heartbreaking, absolutely heartbreaking. Jamie, the reason I messaged in, I mean, I can relate in a certain way. I wrote in about my son, but also from my own perspective. Mm-hmm. You were speaking last week, I heard you mention quite a few times and asking the question, is it policy that we need to change? And it's not. I'm currently a student teacher, a mature student teacher, and the policy is there and schools have the policy, but in my own experience the difference is the practice. Some schools put it into practice and other schools don't, and I could go further and say some management teams put it into practice and others don't. In my case, my son, he was bullied from fifth class in primary school, and he's 15 now, and the bullying is still going on, but there has been huge difference in how different management teams have handled us. When he was 11 in fifth class, it was actually the school principal that contacted me to tell me that he had heard what was happening. Mm-hmm. And that he was going to act on it, and he did. And it continued for a while, but they stamped down on it again and again until it stopped. And then when he started secondary school, he went along and the same guys were involved. And I think when they get into a new school, they think that the protection that the previous teachers or management have, you know, provided is not there, and maybe it starts up again. And unfortunately for my son, the management team in the new school weren't as effective. The policies were there, the same policies that exist in most schools, because most schools use the guidelines of policies that are available either through the department or through the research that's already there. But the difference is how it's implemented. And in my son's case, the management team that were there when he was in first year, they actually managed to make the situation worse because they handled it so badly. And then after first year, they actually retired and a new management team came in. And the new management team, although they were much more positive and much more open to making changes, they still had to, like in his second year, it took nearly that whole year for their changes and for the practice of what actually happened in the school to take effect. Mm. And it's only now in third year that he's actually seeing any difference. So it means that he's been suffering for the last 5 years.
And I'll talk to you in a moment a little bit about the policy, but yes. your son, we'll call him John, he's been suffering this bullying for 4 or 5 years. How is he coping with it, Alison?
Well, he hasn't been. I mean, at this stage, he's in with CAMHS.
What's
and again,
that?
He's been in the CAMHS, the Child and Adolescent Mental Health Service.
Okay.
So he was referred because his own mental health began to suffer. He would act out very aggressively because he wasn't able to, I suppose, in school. So he was just frustrated because, you know, we raised him not to fight, not to, you know, attack other people. So he actually at one stage accused myself and his father of hindering him because he wasn't able to stand up for himself.
Right.
So there was a lot of frustration in that part, in that he felt that, you know, he was fearful of, well, if I react and fight these guys back, then I'm going to get in trouble. But obviously they didn't have the same fear of consequences, you know. So while we're raising our son, you know, to think about what will happen, he's, if you like, at the victim of you know, other children who maybe don't have that same fear.
And Alison, why did they, have you ever established why they picked on him, you know, in fifth class at 11 years of age, why it began then? What happened, or was there a reason?
Well, I know myself. I mean, I'm studying here as a teacher, and, you know, bullying, in essence, is people get bullied because they're different. You know, my son is quite sporty. He's very good at soccer in particular. He adores it. And that's actually been, I think, his saving grace, is that when he got really, really frustrated, he'd go out and kick a ball around. And, you know, so, you know, there was a physical activity there that he could kind of take his frustration out. But I don't think there needs to be an excuse. I think if somebody identifies a difference in someone else, that's what they pick on. And at the essence of bullying, I think that's what it is anyone who is perceived to be different.
Now, you say that the principal got in touch with you. Had your son spoken to you at all? Did you realise that there was a problem? And how did your son react when you asked him what was happening?
The way my son, I suppose, tried to tell us was he would talk about people that were annoying him. He would always say, they're annoying me, or they're at me. And you see, the way it did work and still does, is it's very much, it was verbally more than physical, and it would be things that they would say, and it would be repeated again and again, and he would be singled out. And, you know, there's a certain level where it's banter, where, you know, you'd be having a laugh with someone. But bullying, the difference between bullying and banter is bullying is when someone is persistently and consistently singled out for that type of banter. And in his case, they were, you know, making comments about his teeth. He had quite a prominent overbite. He needed to get braces, but he needed to wait until a certain stage. You know, so that's what they picked on. They call him names.
Right, they zone in on one physical attribute in this instance, and as you say, anybody that is perceived to be in any way different, above or below the level of the bully in that regard, they're more vulnerable. So this went on in primary school for 2 years. Then, obviously, he was leaving to go to secondary school. Did he realise, and did you realise, that these guys were going to be going to the same school? And did you think about maybe saying, hold on, I think we should look somewhere else? Or would that be giving in, would it?
Well, in a way, yes. You know, we didn't want to give in, and we didn't want to, that we had to, make a huge effort to put him somewhere else. But also he wanted to go to that school, and we hoped that the dynamics would change, in that in primary school there were two classes, if you like, of that age group. When it came to secondary school, there were four. There would be a mixture then of, you know, other localities and new children, and there would be a change in dynamics and a change in friendships. And we hoped that that would change. And also the other thing is, it wasn't just one particular group of children. What happened was the guys who came from the primary school, it eventually gave way that other, you know, when I think once somebody is singled out, anyone with the, you know, with that propensity to actually pick on somebody else, the victim gets highlighted, and it's switched from one group to another group.
But Alison,
you know, that other people then joined in.
Alison, we spoke about online bullying. It's everywhere now, and adults do it. All you have to do is look online, and particularly if a politician puts up a tweet or anybody in the public eye, they're immediately taken down with the most horrific sort of commentary in some cases by other adults. You can call them angry or whatever, and maybe into this programme as well, listening to callers or the presenter, you know, people, they don't hold back when it comes to their use of language. Maybe they don't realise the impact that it has. If you actually, as I said, look online and you see what people tweet about other individuals in a public forum, and in some cases they obviously don't feel that it's a problem. But it's in the eye of the beholder, I suppose, with regards to bullying. Do you think, my question, long way of going around it, but we're talking about adults here in that regard, but at
juvenile level, at primary and secondary school level, is there any indication that the guys, the perpetrators, don't actually believe that they are causing any harm, that they actually do believe it is, in a way, banter, and if you can't take it, you know, get a life, sort of? Is there evidence of that? Do they realise the impact that they're actually having? And I just wonder, as an extension to that, when you listen to Mary speaking there about her daughter and the impact that bullying had on her daughter, for people that are listening to us now that may be a little bit older and wiser, but that did partake in that sort of bullying and jibing and, I suppose, upsetting of other fellow pupils in their classrooms when they were young, how do they feel now, or how do they explain away what they were doing?
Well, I suppose that, I mean, my own perspective, I'm probably fortunate in a way in that, you know, as a mother, I'm able to see it from the teenager's perspective and my son's perspective. But then I'm training as a teacher, so I'm also getting some insight in regards to the research that's done into it.
Yes.
We touch on this topic, obviously, in the lectures that we get. I'm in DCU and I'm fortunate to have the anti-bullying centre that's located here. I can attend some of their lectures and that. And what I know from the research into bullying is that it, particularly in school, it tends to happen between those ages of, say, 11 and 15 or 16. And also then, you know, the psychology is children of that age are, you know, their very focus is on their identity of who they are. So in the sense of their cognitive growth and their emotional growth, they're very focused on finding out who they are. So, you know, from the perspective of the bully, if you like, I think as a teenager, if any of us think back to being teenagers, you're so totally focused on yourself. You know, it's like a toddler only, you know, in the teenage hormones to focus on as well. But you're totally focused on who you are and, you know, what you want to get from the world. And I think from the teenager, the perspective of a teenager is that they aren't thinking of the other person. They're either lashing out or, you know, they're trying to be, whether it's a power play or whether they're just trying to be cool or find their own place in the dynamics of a group dynamic or the school dynamic or the group dynamic. When it comes to adults then that do the same thing, I think, you know, they just, the only thing I can think of when it comes to adults is they have not gotten past that part of cognitive development. Because I think any adult who has grown, you know, emotionally or cognitively stops lashing out at other people and is able to empathise with them. I think in a way teenagers have the excuse that they're still growing and developing, but an adult obviously just hasn't gone past that.
But I'm just wondering,
in Mary's situation, that was perpetrated by adults.
I'm going back to something you said earlier on, where you spoke about your son being frustrated at the way he was reared. I know I'm kind of paraphrasing there, but he kind of lashed back at you and your husband for saying to him growing up, you know, this is the way you should behave in school, teaching him what you think is the right thing to do. So I'm just wondering, in instances where you would have, particularly father figures, I would say possibly more than the maternal side of the family, but who knows, Where there's this attitude growing up, stand up for yourself, you know, we are the whatever, you know, don't let anyone ever talk to you, don't let anyone ever bully you, don't let any teachers ever mock you. That sort of strengthening up, you know, the 4 or 5 year old in preparation for the life ahead. Is that, in a way, am I being too simplistic, is that sort of an attitude, in a way, creating a bully mentality in children?
Yeah, I think we can teach children to be, you know, assertive without teaching them that it needs to be a fight, you know, that it needs to be, like, you can stand up for yourself without it turning into an argument or a fight. And I think that's the difference between being assertive and being aggressive. I have to tell you another story just in regards to my son in, you know, the other side of teenagers, because I think, you know, sometimes when we mention teenagers, we mention, you know, a lot of kind of negative things that are associated with them. But just recently, another incident with my son that involved the same group of bullies, in that they were actually picking on someone else, and he himself, listening to it, could see how upset the other person was. And he took the step to go up and tell the teacher what was going on and intervened. They were outside school. It was on a tour occasion and they were all stuck in a confined space on a bus. And rather than reacting aggressively, he actually, because he'd been working so much on this with the support of the team in camp, and he just, you know, focused on his breath and keeping his temper, went up and told the teacher who came down and dealt with it. And then he sat there and supported and comforted the other child that was being, you know, targeted mm-hmm. by mm-hmm. the bullies. And some of the stuff they were saying was absolutely vile and sickening. And I think from the perspective of him is that, I called him in to listen to the show when Jason was on last week.
Friday,
because I wanted him to hear about that there is hope, that
sure.
you will grow up, you will get beyond it.
Alison, that's a really important point that you make. We've had so many calls from parents and from people that were the victims of bullies in primary school and secondary school who have come through it. I know it's easier said than done, to say to somebody, you'll come through it, don't worry about it, it's only another couple of years, whatever. That's really difficult to say to anybody about anything when they're feeling very low. But there is so much evidence coming in over the last week from listeners in their hundreds ringing us up saying, I was a victim of bullying, I was a victim. But how they have actually come through it and become better people and stronger people as a result of it.
And I think that's the point I would make, really important. Is that my son supporting that other child is showing you that despite the fact that he was targeted and victimized, is that he has grown as an individual to have empathy to somebody else in the same situation. Whereas the bullies, if you like, they're not getting that empathy. So in that way, I suppose, you know, in a very positive stint on it, is that they do need that support because they're not growing if that's the way they're lashing out. And I do think, particularly in regards to children, is children who are lashing out that way, you know, you don't lash out that way when you're a happy person and when you're a happy child. Mm-hmm. And I think it is that case of, we've talked so much about well-being in schools, you know, there's a huge emphasis on well-being.
Well,
I think we need to be very aware of the signs of when people aren't well and when they are crying out for help, because the help doesn't always come with them putting their hand up and saying, I need help. Usually it is on the basis of disruptive behaviour or, you know, lashing out at other children because they don't have the ability to actually communicate it to it.
We've other calls to come through on this. Just one final question, because you are studying as a mature student to be a teacher, and congratulations on the best of luck on that. But do you think, Alison, why is it in this day and age, having, you know, spoke about bullying going back generations almost at this stage, and it's still an issue and it's still a problem and it's becoming more intense and more profound, particularly in the online era. But why is it at 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years of age that it isn't an issue that's spoken about in school?
I think because it has been around, well, it is spoken about in schools. I mean, I know my own children have come home from primary school and will ream off all the stuff that they talk about with bullying and, you know, what they're being taught in school in regard to bullying. In the secondary school that my son is in, with the management team that's there, there are posters up all over the place that describe how people should be respectful and treat other people. But I think it comes back to the reason that I contacted you, is it's not just about putting that policy down on paper. It's about it being seen as a practice. The students and the in the school and the learners need to see that actually the staff and the management do take action in regard to bullying, that it's not just a word, that it is something we all have a responsibility about. And I think when they see that action taking place, and I think the other thing is we're still, I mean, the research into bullying is still quite new. There was a convention here recently at VCU, the Anti-Bullying Forum, run by the Anti-Bullying Centre that's located here. And the amount of research that's going on around the entire world is that bullying, you know, it has been around for so long. And I think it's, in a way, it's part of human nature. It's a result of, you know, things that are not going right for people, and it comes out in this way.
Sure.
And I think the more we talk about it and the more we see practices changing and we see actual results.
Right.
Can I just mention, just for
any parents out there,
there is a website for any parents who are concerned that the Anti-Bullying Centre run, and it has a lot of resources and information just to help understand how you can help as a parent or a teacher or even someone, you know, who's watching this and doesn't know how to help.
And what is that website, Alison?
The website is tacklebullying.ie.
Tacklebullying.ie. Okay, we put a link to it as well. Simple as that, tacklebullying.
That
Alison, thank you very much indeed for contacting us and the best of luck to your son, John, as well. We take a break. Alison referred to CAMHS there that her son is getting a lot of help from at the moment, and that is the Child and Adolescent Mental Health Service. It's run by the HSE. Just if you want to find out a little bit more about that, the Child and Adolescent Mental Health Services, it's run by the HSE, CAMHS, which Alison talked about there, 51551. Moving on, Marie is on the line. Hello Marie, you were listening to our opening call there. Thanks for contacting us. And it resonated a little bit with you.
Well, my daughter was bullied quite a lot in national school to begin with. Mm. It started right at the outset of national school for two reasons, I believe. One I know for definite was because her accent was different. We'd just moved from another country. My husband and I are both Irish, but we decided to move home, that it was a better environment for our kids to grow up in. A small rural school, a lot of the kids had gone to creche and play school and all this together, whereas she came in as a total outsider. She didn't know the other children in the class, whereas they all sort of knew each other. And it started from there. First of all, it was her accent. And secondly, I think because she wasn't part of the dynamic that was the whole group, she was an outsider. And it started from there.
What accent did she have, as a matter of interest?
She had an English accent.
Okay.
She had an English accent, and it was quite strong, actually. I used to actually hear her trying to pronounce words with an Irish accent as young as 5 and 6 years of age.
And I'm sorry, Marie, but was there not an onus, or should there be? Here's the question. Should there be an onus on the teacher in a situation like that to make sure that as a young child, what age was she when she...
She was five when she started school. She was four when we came from England. So
is there an onus, or is it above their pay grade, or are they trained to deal with a situation like that, to actually spot what's going on and make somebody that is, as you said, an outsider? And we know in this country how outsiders are treated, even in an adult situation. In some cases, in many cases, they're made very welcome, but there's lots of evidence of where, as we know, and we won't go into it now, where the outsiders are not very welcome, and it's becoming more prevalent, as we know. But do you think, or did you not feel that there was an onus on the school or the teacher in this instance to your daughter? Yes.
Because if you look at a lot of the criteria set down by the Department of Education and everything else, teachers are referred to as acting in loco parentis, which means they're acting on the part of the parent. Mm. To a certain degree. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not expecting teachers to be mammy or daddy when they're in the school setting.
But with 30 children or whatever, I know,
There is an onus on teachers to try and at least correct other children when they start to make fun of a child or, you know, actually exclude them because they're different in whatever way that comes. The problem is, and for us, because we were in a very small rural community, I did find that the teachers had a friendship built up with the parents outside of the school, whereas I was new. I wasn't in that community either. So I was, in essence, a blow-in as well. So when I approached the school and said, look, we have a problem, and as I said, I heard my daughter trying to alter her accent, which made it worse because the words then were coming out sounding totally ridiculous. Because she was trying to speak with an Irish accent so she would fit in. But the torture she went through, and we hadn't the option of moving school because we hadn't transport to get her from where we lived to another school.
And you were coming back to give your child a better life.
But this was it. We thought we were doing the right thing.
Yes. And this continued right through primary school, you say?
And some of the children moved on to secondary school with her, and it continued in there. Now, I didn't just sit on my hands and do nothing. Mm. And like Alison, we had taught our child that reacting physically and violently was not how you dealt with situations.
Shouldn't have to be, of course.
I would go to the school and I would speak with the teacher and spent a long time sitting, having conversations about this, and was assured that it was being looked into and we'll speak with the parents. And it was only when she moved on to secondary school and it continued, and the whole thing came to a head one day. I got a call from her to come and collect her that she was feeling very unwell. And when I got there, because the school was only 10, 15 minutes away from me, and at this stage I had a vehicle to actually go and collect her, her uniform was all wet. And I said to her, what has happened? And somebody had thrown water on her and said to her that she smelled bad and that she was dirty and they didn't want to sit beside her. Now, there is no way on God's earth a teacher did not see somebody throwing a glass of water across the classroom with another child. And when I went into the school and spoke to them, a teacher said to me, she needs to toughen up a bit. Now, at that point, I said, okay, do you know what? I'm actually going to pull her from the school. And if I get in trouble for it, that's fine. But I am actually going to homeschool her if it comes to it. But I'm going to go public with this because this is ridiculous. Nobody should have to suffer at the hands of a bully to this extent.
And Marie, you say there that you consider yourself a blow-in yourself and that you felt that the teachers had a close relationship with the parents, particularly in a rural area. That's a given and always maybe has been the case. So do you feel that it compromised the teachers somewhat into admonishing the children or calling the parents in and speaking to them about the behaviour of their children? They just couldn't do it because of the friendly relationship they had.
And the reason I found out that they hadn't been contacted was one of the parents rang me that night because the school principal contacted the parent, one of the parents, who happened to be involved in the board of management of the school as well.
Right.
And she rang me and she said, I wasn't aware that there was a problem between our children. And I said to her, but this has been going on right through national school. You must have been aware because the national school teacher was contacting you. And she said, never. I have never had a call to let me know there was a problem.
Oh. How is your daughter now, Marie, as a result of that, what, 7 years, 8 years of bullying in school and continuing into secondary school?
Now, I have to say that while she went on and has become an amazing person, has an amazing job in an area that would work with underprivileged people who are marginalised, I'll put it that way.
Yeah.
And that is her job. I do believe that she went down that route as a direct result of what she suffered and wanted to help in some way.
Right.
But it has left a mark on her. She's always second-guessing herself on certain issues like her appearance or different things like that, even though she's a beautiful-looking woman, has an amazing heart. She's a girl that, or a woman that I am in awe of myself because as time went on, she actually became friends with some of these girls. And I used to say to her, I honestly don't know how you do it because if it was me, I don't think I would ever be able to look them in the eye and have a conversation with them. And she always tries to find the reason behind it, that maybe because they were younger and didn't realise. Because a lot of the time, she left school and wouldn't show them that she was upset by what they were saying, but would fall apart at home. And I do believe there's a correlation between some adults who go to national and secondary school having been bullied. And they think, okay, it's over, I'm out, I'll go on to third level, I'll do whatever I have to do, or I'll get a job. And if bullying starts in a workplace, it's all, while it might be a trivial thing to a certain extent, it may be the straw that breaks the camel's back. And I do think there is a connection between adult suicides and what has gone before in national school and secondary school. And because nobody has been ever held accountable. And while I was listening to Alison and I agreed with a lot of what she said, you can write as much as you want in a piece of paper as a policy. If nobody acts on it or nobody is held accountable, then there's nothing being done. There's people writing policies, they're making up rules and regulations. Parents have to sign these rules before their child starts secondary school to say they will adhere to all the policies. I don't think parents even read them. They sign their name at the dotted line.
Yeah.
And nobody comes back and says, by the way, you have to be accountable for your child's behaviour.
Right. It's a kind of a box-ticking exercise. Stay with me, Marie, because we're getting a lot of calls. I just want to go to... And I'd like maybe to come back to you in a couple of issues if I can. But Siobhan is there as well. Good afternoon to you, Siobhan. 51551, our text. Go ahead, Siobhan, your point.
point is, I'm just listening to a lot of the why is it happening in schools and why is the same thing going over and over again. I mean, I'm thinking back to my school day, and again, I probably would have been maybe to a degree, but looking back on it, maybe considered as a bit of a bully or what. But I mean, back in them days, you were in school, and I think it's the same thing now. It's basically you're in a group, everybody's competing against one another, and if you're popular, which I suppose I would have classed myself as, and in, you know, the popular group, I mean, it's very easy for somebody who's quiet and just kind of in the shadows and in the background to be the butt of jokes. And I've kind of seen it in, you know, people. I live in a local town, so I've grown up, moved down from school, and I still see these people. And it's only after school that I've got to know them, and you kind of realise and you look back. And, you know, I think that happens a lot in schools where, you know, that can happen to a degree, but sometimes obviously it can escalate to, you know, a more serious thing, and obviously other people can join in and other groups. I've listened to your other callers before, and I think that's a lot to do with that. I suppose children at that age, they don't really realise, maybe to a degree, a lot of them. And now, obviously, there is the exceptions out there, but I think a lot of them just are just all trying to fit in, you know. And then, as I said, when I left school, then obviously I'm, you know, I have my own son now, very popular, outgoing, went throughout school. Got up to about fifth and sixth year, and again, like that, he put in a huge group of friends, not even from somebody picking on him. They ended up, falling out or bullying them, such to a degree that, you know, excluding them from WhatsApp groups. You know, it came to a point where I had to take his social media phones and stuff off him at night, had to get him counselling. You know, he was being just completely, you know, shunned out of the group and everything else. Just again, like that, as far as what I can see, it was nearly the same circle going around again, just the whole fitting in purpose, and top dog, and they're in their different groups, you know. So I just, like, I'm kind of, obviously he's out of it, he's in college now, he's getting on great, he's friendly with them again, but I just think within schools, I think a lot more should be done within, as I said, pairing people up maybe that might not necessarily...
But you know, Siobhan, you kind of said there at one stage, you know, you would have been, yourself, and you're going back a number of years, would have been... considered a bully. How do you know that? Was it said to you? Do you know now, looking back, that you probably were that? Or
you know what, it wasn't said to me, and I probably wouldn't have been the one. I definitely wasn't one of the worst in my group, and I've had a good upbringing. Do you know that way?
Yeah.
But I consider myself, because I didn't stop it. I didn't, you know, speak up for anybody. I kind of probably joined in the group, kind of laughed along. I probably did, you know, say things to a degree. Now, I didn't necessarily single anybody out myself. Do you know that way?
But when a group of girls were having a go at the weaker member of the class, it's almost
God,
the animal kingdom. The weakling tends to be the one that you feel that instead of actually standing up for that person, you were rowing in. Was that to try and be? I mean, is there a sense with bullies that it's a case of survival of the fittest, and you gotta be like that to fit in? Is that?
I think it is. Yeah, because obviously, like that, as I said, I would have been very popular in school. So I suppose, that's how I probably looked at it. But again, like that, I wouldn't have necessarily looked at the person who was the butt of the joke and kind of taught any more about it. Do you know that kind of way?
You didn't feel for them. You didn't realise the impact it was having. Yeah.
No, you don't at that age, I don't think. And because it's far from your radar of, you know, going out at the weekends or, you know, chasing after certain boys or whatever else. It's only when you actually leave school or you have more, you know, awareness around you and you actually speak to these people in a different sort of setting that you realise, God, you know, thinking back... You know, I never knew this person in school, kind of, you know.
You could have done it different. Okay, Siobhan, listen, thanks for your call on that. Marie is still there. Danielle's still there. I'll take a break. Back after these. This is probably a tough listen for an awful lot of people over the past 4 or 5 days talking about the issue of bullying. But it is a real live problem which still exists all over the country for many different reasons. And more and more people contacting us to tell us of their experiences at the hands of bullies or as parents in particular, which is probably even, I would suggest, even more. More difficult, in fact, it probably is more difficult when you are somewhat helpless and you realise what your children are going through and maybe what you realise at a later stage what they have gone through and you knew nothing about it. Danielle is on the line there. Danielle, good afternoon to you. Thanks for contacting us. Now, you listened to Mia's mum, like so many people, last week, and of course then we had Mary on about her beautiful daughter Kaylee earlier on, and it kind of resonated very much with you.
Absolutely. My absolute heartfelt condolences to both of those mothers. They broke my heart, mainly because that could have been me if I hadn't gotten to my daughter in time. She tried to end her own life as well, and luckily she failed. But by the grace of God, I could be telling you a totally different story today, just like those two very brave mothers did.
Your daughter, Claire, was what age?
She was 14 going on 15. She was doing her junior cert.
Right.
She was in her junior cert year when the bullying, well, I presume that's when the bullying started, to be perfectly honest with you. The first thing I knew about it was when she came in and told me she'd taken some tablets. She kept it all hidden. And it is the worst words any parent, mother or father, can hear, that they've done something to themselves.
How long had she been suffering before she spoke to you?
I would say it was about six to eight months at least of very, very serious, really horrible bullying. It was all online, which is the new thing, where when we were young, we got peace when we locked our front door. They don't get that anymore. Yeah. It's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and you can tell them to stay off social media, but it's harder because they need to know what's being said. The thoughts of what's being said about them is almost worse than reading what's being said about them. Mm-hmm. And she just suffered dreadfully because of it, and it was only when she made that attempt we started to unravel it, and we started to discover just how bad it was and what had been done and what had been said. And the awful part was that one time she couldn't take it anymore, and she hit back, literally physically hit back, which we have never encouraged any of our kids to do, but she did. And they had the nerve to call the police on her. The bullies called the police on her. And only that Claire handed through, she got some bravery from somewhere, and she handed her phone to the police officer, and she said, well, read that and then tell me. And then the police said, right, that's not on. And they got involved and they helped. And between everybody, we all just managed to save her life and bring her back and get her to where she is now, which was very difficult.
How is she now, Danielle? How many years on are we now at this stage?
She has just started in third level.
Okay.
So she went on to do her leaving cert. She did really well. She made us all so, well, she made, makes us proud anyway for what she survived in her short life, but she made us so proud, and she's just started in third level.
That's good.
And she's really happy now.
But when she came to you and finally broke the news to you she'd been suffering this, how did you deal with it?
I remember that night, the first thing I did was ring an ambulance. And the fantastic woman on the other end of the phone kept me on the line and kept talking to me. You keep checking her, keep doing this. She went to the hospital, and then we got counsellors involved, and CAMS got involved, and they were brilliant. And then we got private counselling for her as well, because they're very busy. They can't see everybody, and they can't see them enough. It's not their fault. It's a horrible indictment that they're so busy, you know, with so many children suffering. So we got her private counselling as well, and it was a slow road. And, you know, it's not finished. She carries the scars. She carries physical scars. That'll never go away.
But did she stay in the same school, or was she in contact with these people after?
No, we moved her. Oh, no, right. she unfortunately couldn't. She was taken out of school. She couldn't do her junior cert. The bullies did, but she couldn't. And we moved her immediately. We were very, very lucky. We were blessed with another school in the area. The principal was fantastic, and they saved her as well. They were fantastic to her. They knew her history. Mm. They never spoke to her about it, but they knew that if she knew that if she needed them, they were there. They didn't, you know, so
yeah. And we've only touched, again, it's the online element of it, and you know, as Marie was saying earlier, it's only getting worse. And as I said, it seeps into adulthood as well. Go on Twitter there today, and you'll see, for example, or any of the other social media outlets where people are very happy to make very crude comments about others,
and
thinking they're probably being funny or smart or trying to get extra likes or whatever. But anyway, getting back to your daughter's situation, did she ever have, what prompted it? Because as you said, it was at 13, 14 that this actually began. Everything was fine up until then. What were they saying about her, or what was the trigger?
To be honest, I couldn't go into a lot of what they were saying because it's daytime radio, and it was really horrible. A lot of it was.
But why Claire? Why was she chosen?
I don't know. I honestly don't know.
Did she say something? Did she do something that?
She was quite quiet. She didn't have an awful lot of confidence, but she was physically a very good-looking girl, which seems to be a pattern. I mean, I've seen the pictures of Mia. She was stunning. And, you know, and I often wondered, was her shyness mistaken? Not that I'm trying to give any credit to the bullies, but was her shyness taken as arrogance? Was there something they saw? Was she a threat to them? You see, she started late in that school because we moved. So she sort of came in when these groups were established. So maybe perhaps trying to get into a group, she put somebody's nose out of joint. I don't know. Sometimes there is no trigger. Sometimes they're just not very nice. Mm. And it's very hard to see a trigger. But I just wish, you know, that sometimes a bully could see what they do. They go home and they mightn't think twice about what they've done. But if they could look at a child's arms and see the scars, or if they could sit beside them in the hospital bed like I had to do. And I hate to say I'm lucky because of what we went through, but listening to the women, the brave women I've listened to, we were lucky. She survived.
Yeah. Well, Marie is still there. Marie, we just have a few seconds left, but your daughter is a little further on than Claire is. Do you have anything to say to Danielle there? Because she's still suffering a little bit, you know, as a result of it. She's into third level now and doing well. Your daughter's further on. What do you say to Danielle?
I used to say to my daughter, the best way to beat these bullies is to make something amazing of yourself and show them that they did not win and could not win, that despite their best efforts. But something that Mum has just said there, and I think this is what it comes down to. When a parent goes to a school and asks for intervention, it's a phone call to the parents, or the parents are brought in and spoken to. They never face their victims. They never have to face them in a setting where the parents and themselves are there with the parents of the victim and the child. So to them, it's over there. It's happening out there. We're not responsible because we can't see the end result of our actions.
Okay.
And to all the parents who have lost the child, I just want to say, I am so, so heartbroken for them. And that's genuine, because the worst thing in this world has to be to see your child leave this world before you.
Absolutely.
And to leave under those circumstances have to make it far worse.
All right. Marie, thank you so much for contacting us. Danielle, thank you. And best wishes to your daughters. And we do think of Kayleigh Ryan Sheehan, that beautiful young girl who tragically died last June, whose mother Mary started the programme this afternoon.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Do you have a TV licence? Inspectors are calling to unlicensed homes and businesses. If you don't, that can mean prosecution and a fine of up to €1,000. It's the law, so get yours at tvlicense.ie or at any post office. Brought to you by the Government of Ireland.
Are you ambitious for your business? SkillNet Ireland is here to help. Together with our 68 SkillNet learning networks, we offer innovative training and upskilling programmes designed around the needs of your business. Our goals are the same as yours, to make your business the best it can be. Visit skillnetireland.ie to see the full range of supports available for your business. SkillNet Ireland is a business support agency of the Government of Ireland.
Hyundai in 2020. Offering Irish motorists the best of all worlds with five driving options. A superb choice of petrol models, innovative diesel models, featuring the latest Euro 6 technology, and the choice of hybrid, plug-in hybrid, and full electric. See the full 201 range from Ireland's best-selling electric car brand at Hyundai.ie. Hyundai, the best of all worlds. Discover why.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with bonkers.ie. Take the fright out of winter gas and electricity bills by switching to a cheaper energy supplier with bonkers.ie today.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Fergus Sweeney produced. Joe Duffy's back tomorrow. Ray Darcy's next. Good afternoon.